Dieser Podcast wird präsentiert von Amplify Your Life, das erste Mindset-Workbook, das Achtsamkeit, Mental Health und Rock'n'Roll vereint.
Wir sind Jana Solveig und Uwe Lerch, das Powerpaar hinter diesem Buch. Für mehr Tiefe und Sinn in lauten Zeiten.
Fühlst du dich ständig erschöpft und sehnst dich nach Klarheit, innerer Ruhe und Selbstwirksamkeit?
Mit dem Spirit des Rock'n'Roll zeigen wir dir, wie du deinen inneren Verstärker wieder auf die 11 drehst. Klar, fokussiert und lebendig.
Amplify Your Life. Jetzt mehr erfahren und vorbestellen auf www.amplifyyourlife.de. Hallo Leute, ich begrüße euch heute mal wieder als Anhalter auf meinem American Road Trip. Alle Stammgäste meines Podcasts kennen ja bereits die Geschichte. Animiert von einem Gläschen meines Lieblingsbourbon Maker's Mark kam ich auf den Geschmack, gemeinsam mit euch einen virtuellen Trip quer durch die USA zu machen, um nach den Wurzeln meiner musikalischen Helden zu buddeln. Wer den Start in diesen Trip verpasst hat, der sollte sich noch einmal schnell die dazugehörige Trailer-Episode etwas weiter unten anhören. Vor allem, welche Rolle hier eine Flasche aus Kentucky, USA mit einem roten Wachssiegel spielt, der mich mit einem milden, bernsteinfarbenen, süßlichen Inhalt bei 45 Umdrehungen zu diesen handgemachten Geschichten inspiriert hat. Wir sind vor 5 Episoden in Chicago gestartet und waren zunächst bei Cheap Trick in Rockford, Illinois. Danach ging es über weite Teile der alten Route 66 nach St. Louis, Missouri, wo wir Devin Allman von der Allman Betts Band getroffen haben, der uns eine Menge Südstaaten-Feeling mitgegeben hat. Anschließend ging es zur Bourbon-Destille nach Loretto, Kentucky, wo wir viel über die Herstellung von Maker's Mark erfahren haben und von dort aus weiter nach Edmonton zu John Fred Young vom Blackstone Sherry, der von einem Besuch eines Bundesligaspieles träumt. Seit der letzten Episode befinden wir uns in Nashville, Tennessee, der aktuell sicherlich wichtigsten Musikstadt der USA, wenn nicht sogar der Welt. Hier haben wir in der letzten Woche die beiden Lovell-Schwestern, besser bekannt als Larkin Poe, getroffen. Und heute steigt ein und lasst euch überraschen. Heute begegnen wir einem der aktivsten Musiker der letzten 2 Jahrzehnte, Joe Bonamassa, der ungekrönte Kaiser des Modern Blues. Im Schnitt spielt er knapp 200 Shows im Jahr. Dazu hat er eine Diskografie, die mittlerweile über 40 Alben umfasst, Studio, Live und Kollaboration. Die große Konstante bei ihm ist die permanente Metamorphose. Jedes Album klingt komplett anders als sein jeweiliger Vorgänger. Und auch für das letzte Studioalbum, Royalty, hat sich Mr. Bonamassa wieder etwas ganz Besonderes einfallen lassen. Er hat es in den legendären Abbey Road Studios in London aufgenommen, um seiner großen Liebe zum britischen Blues den richtigen Raum zu geben. Aus der großen Tour wurde dann leider nichts. Aber Joe hat ein paar Streaming-Events umgesetzt, eines davon im legendären Ryman Auditorium, der Mutterkirche der Country-Musik, in Nashville. Dieses Konzert erscheint Anfang Juni als Live-CD mit den besten Songs von Royalty. Aber lassen wir ihn doch das selbst mal erzählen. Hallo Joe, wo erwischen wir dich gerade?
Well, I'm in Nashville, Tennessee. I've been working with Eric Gales on producing his next solo record. So we've been writing and doing some demos. So I'm very excited about it. And I'm keeping busy through the downtime.
Du hast dein letztes Album Royalty in den Abbey Road Studios in London aufgenommen, wo einst schon die Beatles standen. Wie hast du die Zeit danach verbracht?
Well, I took a couple of months off. Then I decided to get back to work. I went on a diet because I had 2 choices. First choice was to get fat and miserable. And the second choice was to get skinny and miserable. So I decided to get skinny and remain miserable. Truthfully, What happened, most of the days I was spending, you know, working on my Live from Nerdville broadcasts. I still do my Sirius XM show every week. I do a fair amount that isn't guitar related. You know, we still run a business here. So it's been an interesting 4 months. It's been the longest since I've been touring that I've been off. I feel good, you know, but I'm ready to get back.
Die weltweite Corona-Pandemie hat auch deine normalerweise sehr intensiven Tourpläne durcheinandergewirbelt. Wie schwierig war es für dich, so lange zu Hause zu sitzen?
Well, I think it's difficult for everyone to cope with this situation. You spend your whole life playing guitar, touring. Our slogan is, we're always on the road. And when you're suddenly, you know, not by your own doing, told you need to go home for an indefinite amount of time, it is difficult to cope at first. And I know a lot of my artist friends have the same problem. We're, you know, just going, what do we do with ourselves? You know, are you playing? Are you writing? And most of the time, the answer is no. You know, surprisingly, I mean, I think the pervasive narrative and all, it's like, well, oh my God, the greatness of the recordings and the writing that's going to come out of pandemic because all these musicians are stuck home, you know, and they're going to be playing better and writing better. Most of the people I know are not doing anything. Why? Because there's no reason. I'm the same way. I don't play very much anymore. I try to play every day, but I haven't done much. Now that I'm working with Eric Gales and we're, you know, got a few things going on in the fall with the live stream pay-per-view, now I have a reason to play. You know, I'm a live guitar player. You know, I'm not sitting there just making videos of myself to post on Instagram. Well, I do some of that too.
Was bereitet dir in diesem Zusammenhang Sorgen? Wovor hast du am meisten Angst?
The biggest worry I have as a society is that coronavirus is going to be here for a long time. And we need to cope and manage and deal with that the best we can. Because especially here in America, we're not united and can't agree on anything. We can't even agree that wearing a mask isn't political. It's very strange, you know. I wear a mask out of respect to my friends and the people that run businesses and the shopkeep. It's the unknown knowns. We know that it spreads by air, but we don't know how easy or hard it is to contract the virus. You just err on the side of caution, and that's what I've been doing. That's what I worry about on a society level. On a personal level, I've spent many of nights just thinking, going, it might be over for me, and I'm okay with that. You know, my career may be over as a guy in a suit and goes out and plays big theaters and arenas and whatever. If that's the end, then that's the end, you know. You can't do anything about it. You just do everything with the best of intentions. So I have no idea what the future holds. I think generally everybody's thinking we're going to get back to work next year. I'm not so sure. I think it's spring 2022 by the time concerts look like they used to. I don't know. That's my biggest worry.
Hat dich diese Situation auch ans Nachdenken gebracht? Ist die Pandemie bei allen schlimmen Tragödien, gerade bei euch in den USA, nicht auch eine Form eines Weckrufes, dem man auch am Stück dankbar sein muss?
That's an interesting question. The question really is, am I just a machine that makes music? The answer is no. You know, I only play 100 shows a year, which takes about 7 or 8 months. So I'm off 4 or 5 months. I've been carrying 10 pounds for the last 5 years, and I wanted to get rid of those and just feel good and concentrate on healthy living and diet and just reprioritize a few things. I've been going through, just like everybody, you know, just these pervasive doubts, things that about yourself that maybe you want to improve, and enjoying a little bit of time off, which a lot of my friends said for years that I needed. And more importantly, I needed it for myself, because you do start feeling like a machine, a touring and writing machine, because there's always something to do. And we were always on the road. We were always working. I mean, 44th albums in 20 years. That's crazy. So hopping off the high-speed rail for a minute has been good.
Viele Künstler behaupten, dass die Welt nach der Pandemie eine ganz andere sein wird. Wie ist deine Meinung dazu?
Who knows? Nobody has a crystal ball. All I know is that I've had many of conversations with my friends, many conversations with my family. I've listened to a lot of podcasts. I have watched people on television. And everybody does not know definitively what's going to happen. They just don't. And if they say they do, they're probably making it up. It's a lot of speculation. Who knows what the music business is going to look like in 2 years, 5 years, 10 years? I mean, things have changed in the last 5 years that I never thought I'd see change. now that live streaming and Zoom and everything else, you know, you're going to see a hit on the commercial real estate market where offices are just not going to reopen because companies figure out, why are we paying all this overhead and supplying coffee for 200 employees when they can make their own coffee at their own house and just get on a computer screen and we can do the exact same thing. Concerts are a little bit different because you can live stream a concert and it doesn't matter if you have that wonderful Macintosh power amp and all the speakers in the world in your house. You don't get that kinetic energy and that connection with the band, and the band does not get the connection with the audience. So that's what gives me hope that concerts were going to come back. They just may look a little differently in the short term, but you never know. All these sea change events in the world always have ramifications. You know, we went through the terrorist attacks in 2001 on September 11th, and things changed, and we just accepted it. You know, we now have to take our shoes off at the airport. It changed, and we've been doing it for 20 years. So there's going to be a sea change. There's going to be things that are going to be changing and permanent that we didn't think 4 months ago.
Mit deinem letzten Studioalbum Royalty hast du ein großes Ausrufezeichen gesetzt. Stimmt eigentlich die Geschichte, dass die Musiker des Orchesters überrascht aus der Wäsche geguckt haben, als du deine Amps bei den Aufnahmen hochgedreht hast?
No, they did not. They gave us some, who the hell is that, in the orchestra room when they were recording in B, but we recorded in A. And, you know, one of the things is I play loud in the studio. I like to move air. I like the sound of loud. And even if you're listening back in the control room at a low volume, there's an intensity. I use my entire live rig. I use 4 amps, and we only mic 2, but all 4 amps are on because what you're trying to do is create the sound pressure in the room. And you could hear it through the walls. I bet you some of the cello players were like, God. Anyway, that's what we do. It's rock and roll. It should be dangerous.
Was ist für dich in der Nachbetrachtung der wichtigste Aspekt von Royalty für dich?
The most important aspect of Royalty for me is it's a very personal record that I wrote about real events, that I didn't sugarcoat it, I didn't protect the innocent, and I needed to make a record like that. You got to connect it with yourself. What do you want to say? How do you want to say it? Are you comfortable letting this information out in the public?
Die Abbey Road Studios haben sicherlich eine ganz besondere Duftmarke auf dieser Produktion hinterlassen, oder?
Every studio that you record at, okay, I'm doing this interview at Blackbird Studios. We did a record here called Redemption. And I hear the sound of Blackbird Studios on that record. It's in Nashville. And when I listen to Redemption, I see the fingerprint. Or I can just hear it in the music, and I can hear it in the recording, and hear it in the drums. When we recorded at Abbey Road for Royalty, it's a gigantic room. So I hear this kind of British thing. You know, we're also dealing with a different power. It's 240 volts versus 115. And that's just on the console. And just being in the room, being in Nashville, or being in New York, or being in London, just being in those cities affects the way records sound. There's a certain symbiotic relationship you have with the city while you're there recording, and it permeates into the music.
Ich habe mal über dich gelesen, dass wenn man dich in eine Zeitmaschine setzen würde, du gerne im Jahr 1946 geboren wärst. Du wärst dann genau 20 Jahre im Jahr 66 gewesen und direkt nach London gegangen, wo gerade der britische Blues gestartet ist. Was fasziniert dich hier so?
I would be born in 1946 because I wanted to be there and see it when it was being invented. I'm an interpreter. Okay, I interpret American black blues music. I also interpret the British version of American black blues music. And I've always been intrigued by what was happening in London in the middle of 1960s. There's this energy and there is this free form spirit, and everybody was on fire and everybody was out trying to outdo each other, write better songs, play louder, play faster. And it was all new. And there was no rules. And that's what I love about that kind of thing. It's like there's no rules. And I would have loved to have been there in London at the Marquee Club just to see Free and Cream and John Mayall and the Blues Breakers, Alexis Corner, and just see what those gigs were like. And in terms of now, you go to see a gig, no matter how good it is, unless you're going to see the Rolling Stones, I mean, we're just all interpretations of what went on back in those days in the mid-1960s.
Zurück zu deinem letzten Album, Royalty. Genau 20 Jahre nach deinem Debüt A New Day Yesterday ist diese Platte dein 14. Studioalbum. Du hast das Album ja in London aufgenommen und auch längere Zeit dort verbracht.
I love London. I've been going there for a long time. I know a lot of people there. I have friends there. I feel at home there. There's a certain spirit and energy that London has, just like if you're in New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Nashville, Amsterdam, Moscow, or, you know, it's like Tokyo. I mean, everything has an energy. And the whole idea about London is to get that sound, to kind of put yourself in that headspace, write it like a British blues album, and record it at Abbey Road, the most iconic studio, arguably, in the world. And that was the whole point of doing it in London. It was horribly expensive to do, but it was totally worth it because it did exactly what it was supposed to do. It made the album sound British.
Bei der Produktion hast du mit sehr unterschiedlichen britischen Kollegen zusammengearbeitet. Peter Brown, Jules Holland und Bernie Marsden. Jeder der drei ist eine Legende. Aber was verbindet euch?
Bernie Marsden and I, we connect on a guitar level. We love Free. We love Les Pauls. We love old guitars. I love Bernie's playing. I love his writing, his singing. He's one of my best friends in the world, but he's also, I think, one of the most underrated musicians that anybody could ever be in the room with. He's got a great melodic sense. He's got a wonderful way of playing the guitar, and he's very British. I was asking him, you know, like we would be writing a song. I'm like, Bernie, what would you do? How would the British play it? And then he would go to like the minor third. And I'm like, oh, right, exactly. So he has this sensibility. But he also loves the blues. And he also loves rock. And he's a great collaborator. Jules is wonderful. We wrote that Boogie together with Dave Stewart. He's just one of the most outstanding musicians and icons of British music, you know, from his time with Squeeze and, later with Jules Holland. He's just fantastic. And he's just a wonderful cat. Love that guy. Pete Brown, man, he's 80 years old and he's still as hip as he was when he was 25. Unbelievable. He's been writing those kind of funky lyrics forever and just some beautiful stuff that he came up with, When One Door Opens. Just killer imagery and poetry and exactly what I was hoping to get from Pete, we got. And I love the man. He's just such a cool guy.
Ich habe vernommen, dass du Royalty als sehr bissige Platte einstufst. Ist es etwa so, weil du im letzten Jahr eine Trennung durchgemacht hast? Kannst du daher gut mit solchen Extremsituationen umgehen, die dich am Ende noch mehr anspornen?
I like to work best under pressure because most of the great songs come at the very, very end. When your back is against the wall. Like the last song we wrote for the record is the title track, Royal Tea. And that was inspired by, I was having breakfast in my room before we were going to one of the last writing sessions before the band got there. And I saw the whole drama unfold with Prince Harry and Meghan Markle or Merkel. It was just this surreal leaving the royal family, like, you know, Paul's leaving the Beatles or something like that. I don't understand how that works. Being an American, I don't really understand the dynamic, but leaving and then moving to ultimately Los Angeles, California. And I wrote this song about it, kind of had these weird chord changes in my mind and its title, Royal Tea. It's just one of those things where you just go, you're inspired by something Piers Morgan said, and that's about as simple as it gets.
Wenn auch ihr jetzt mehr Lust bekommen habt, euch in die umfangreiche Diskografie von Joe Bonamassa reinzuhören, dann klickt doch mal auf meine Playlist des American Road Trip. Das Ganze gibt es auf Spotify. Ihr findet den Link dazu in den Shownotes, das ist die Beschreibung zu dieser Episode bei dem Portal, über die ihr diese Geschichte gerade gehört habt. Für heute war es das dann schon, aber die Lichter in Nashville sind gerade erst angegangen und so bleibe ich noch ein bisschen hier, um mich von dieser Stadt treiben zu lassen. Aber schon bald geht es wieder weiter, quer durch die USA. Lasst euch einfach überraschen und steigt auch das nächste Mal wieder mit ein. Ich gönne mir jetzt noch einen Drink. Auch auf euch. Prost und danke, dass ihr mitgefahren seid.
Dieser Podcast wird vermarktet durch die Podcastbude.